Hi there, hockey fans, and welcome back to RotoWire Signature NHL Hockey Pod Puckcast with Statsman and AJ. Friends, I'm Paul Bruno in Toronto, Ontario, and you can follow me at Statsman22. My co-host is AJ Scholes, a great follow at AJScholes24. He's based in beautiful Sun Prairie, Wisconsin. That's very close to RotoWire headquarters over in Madison, Wisconsin. And it's going to be a busy place the rest of the week with the hockey trades that we anticipate between now and Monday. And that's going to certainly be a focal point of our show today, where we try to take a look in advance to see who might be the buyers and sellers and who's really going to be available as things heat up toward that outcome. And we already saw a few trades this week. One happened just as we went to air today that AJ filled me in on. So, AJ, why don't you lead us into the deals, and I will have my own rebuttal.
Yeah, I'll start with the one you mentioned too, the trade that just happened right before we kick this off. Frank Vetrano going to the Rangers from Florida in exchange for a 2022 fourth round pick. No players coming back for Florida, so obviously the key here is clearing some salary cap space. They are obviously going to be in on, you know, some more deals here in the upcoming trade deadline. We'll talk more about what we might think is headed what way when we get to Florida here. But as far as the trade goes, you know, they only have one pick in the first three rounds. At the time, they only had two picks in the first four rounds next year. So it'll get them one more here. And the Rangers actually already had two fourth-round picks, theirs and Winnipeg. So trading from a place of strength for the Rangers there, obviously. And I think a good deal for both sides. I would expect Vetrano could maybe even push, like a Dryden Hunt for a second-line role in that one. So overall, I think this is a good deal for both sides. It sets up some more potential moves down the road.
Well, it certainly does, and it gives me an idea that some teams are going to follow suit in terms of trying to clear salary and look for players that might be attractive to other teams and then make space where they can do some more damage. So I really like the way this trade sets up, actually, for both teams. It helps the Rangers, as you said, with their depth chart, but certainly clears some space at the other end for Florida, and we know they're going to be active at the trade deadline. This is a clear signal, and we might expect one Claude Giroux to be one of their targets, and we'll get into several of those, AJ. But Colorado did make a couple of moves. They're another team that's been linked to the aforementioned Giroux, and so it's kind of topical and a nice segue by me unintentionally, but here go those two deals, partner. Colorado trading Tyson Yost to Minnesota for Nico Sturm. And this was clearly a deal where Colorado's been holding on to Tyson Yost and waiting for him to develop, but he kept falling further and further down the depth chart. I understand, and you may correct me if I'm wrong, that he has ties to the state of hockey, and Sturm coming back the other way is more of a depth piece and one of those space-creating situations for Colorado. And they follow that up, I guess we can touch on the first deal that kicked off the frenzy this year, and that's trading Drew Helison plus a 2023 second-round pick to Anaheim for Josh Manson, a very highly coveted defenseman who's going to augment the top four in Colorado, making them rock solid back there. I love the depth on this blue line, and they've added a tough physical player who has a scoring upside as well, so he'll fit right in to the Colorado mix, and I think a great couple of moves for Colorado, but I'm sure they're not done yet. What do you think about these two deals?
Yeah, I think, with the Yost move, it's also a contract savings this year. Nico Sturm, significantly cheaper. I think it's like 1.25, somewhere in that range, the difference between the two deals. So a little bit more cap flexibility here. Sturm will also give them some added height on the bottom of their lineup. He's 6'3", mm-hmm. So you're not going to miss him anytime soon. They'll add some physicality in that sense. Yost, I think for him, it's a good move to try something different. Hasn't really been working out great in Colorado there. You mentioned the John Manson acquisition. I think it's a great move for Anaheim. You know, not that you want to lose a guy like Josh Manson, but they get a second round pick, which, you know, should parlay into a decent player. And then they actually signed Drew Helison right away to a 3-year entry level deal. So they made sure to shore him up right away without having to worry about that. So I like the move, adding a player, a collegiate player in Helison. They get a pick. And then, yeah, as you said, Manson will be great for great for Colorado in their back end, which, you know, the one interesting thing there is obviously it's not something that we necessarily would have thought that they would look for, but you've got Bowen Byram, who's been out for a while, and then Samuel Garrard also dealing with an injury. I think if both of those players were available, I'm not sure Colorado would have necessarily been in on Josh Manson. That's just my take on it.
That's a very interesting take, AJ. And, you know, I hearken back to previous playoff runs where teams and a lot of managers say that it's a war of attrition, this two-month run in the playoffs, and you want to have depth at every position, particularly on the blue line. And they say that they like to have contending teams really should aim to have eight serviceable pieces among their defensive components. And so maybe that's the way Colorado is looking at this. They're expecting a long run and they want to bolster themselves for that. And that's why maybe they brought the guy in, but it wasn't the biggest need that I think this team has. And I think they'll fill that in coming days. AJ, there were a couple of other issues that don't really relate to the trade deadline, but one really caught my eye, and that was the return of Jack Eichel to Buffalo. Now, let me set the stage. I'm a wrestling fan, too. And, and his outburst at the end of a game where the Sabres really took care of Las Vegas and they really didn't welcome Eichel back, he took the opportunity at the end of the game to say words to the effect that it took this team, this fan base, 7 years to get really excited about hockey, and it was all about his return to the stadium and where he spent his first several years of his career. And he said things might have turned out differently if they were that loud and that boisterous in the years that he was with the team. So it was a real cheap shot at the fans, and I thought it was important to call that out in this part of the show. AJ, I didn't really appreciate that aspect. It came across more like I say a wrestling promo than anything else, but a broadside against one of the league's best fan bases is something that I really didn't like. And that's what I wanted to call out today. I know things aren't good in Las Vegas right now. They're on a long losing streak and it could cost them a playoff spot, but this was not the way to vent. And it's a bad look on Eichel, I think.
Well, I'll play devil's advocate here and just maybe make the argument that it wasn't intended necessarily as malicious. I mean, you're talking about a guy that had been booed the entire game when he touched the puck, which, you know, fans' prerogative. I don't begrudge them that. And, you know, you want to talk about wrestling promos. You're talking about a fan base in the Bills Mafia that, like, jumps through tables all the time. So, I mean, maybe, you know, maybe both sides see it more as, like, less of a shot across the bow and more of just friendly banter back and forth. I think that's the way I kind of observed it. I didn't think his comments were necessarily malicious in intent. Now, I could certainly see if, you know, if people in Buffalo were offended by that, why they would have taken it that way. But I don't believe that there was necessarily a malicious intent to the comment, especially with how vehemently they booed him every time that they touched the puck.
Well, it's going to guarantee that he gets that same kind of reception for the rest of his career when he goes back to the Queen City, and I'll be watching for that down the road. The third topic that I wanted to touch on, AJ, is more impactful in my neck of the woods, where Austin Matthews, clearly the signature player on Maple Leafs, received a two-game suspension for his participation in an altercation with Rasmus Dahlin, where he struck Dahlin with a cross-check to the neck, certainly a serious foul, but it was preceded by a pushing and shoving match that included a lot of contact between these two guys, including a couple of cross checks to the body by Dahlin. So he was by no means an innocent party in this, and Matthews is certainly responsible for his stick and deserving of a suspension. But I was surprised that Dahlin didn't even get a minor penalty for his part of the issue. And incidentally, the early returns are positive here in Toronto. They played their first game without Matthews, and they had a 65% win percentage in Matthews' career when he's out of the lineup. I don't know if I want to test that long term, but certainly in their first game without him in this two-game stretch, John Tavares rose to the occasion. We'll have more to say about his performance in that game and the outlook for this team the rest of the week. But what say you about that altercation in the Heritage Classic?
Yeah, I think your perception might be slightly tainted by your home location there being in proximity to Toronto. But I guess I'll put it this way. I'm not surprised that they didn't give Dahlin a suspension, but I also wouldn't have been surprised if they had given him a suspension.
I'm even looking for a penalty, though. There was not even a minor penalty. That more.
Well, we're talking missed penalties, they probably should have hit Matthews with a misconduct for.
Well, true, true.
So, I mean, penalties were missed on both sides with that. And then, you know, we complain about them not letting guys play. And then when they do let them play, we complain about missed calls. So the refs are in a tough spot here. I will say, if they gave Dahlin a one-game suspension, I almost feel like they would have had to up Matthews to like 3 games so that his suspension was 2 more than Dahlin. So from that standpoint, maybe it's better off they didn't suspend both guys.
No, I get that. I was just looking for a minor penalty at least for Dahlin instigating the whole escapade. And that might have helped the outcome. Who knows? But it was certainly something where I don't think he should have got off scot-free in any case. But you're right. We can lament about referees in every game that we watch in the NHL. That's just part of the sport and the story. Anyway, that's the preamble to this week's show. We've got a lot to cover, AJ, and it's my turn to bat leadoff as we look at the rosters of all 32 teams. Today, we're really going to focus on the most likely players to be moved next week as we take the usual deep dive here, noting club records 2 for the past 7 days and players scoring over the last 7 days as well. But the focus will be on, as you suggested, a look toward the trade deadline and see who was going to be moving from the sellers and who the buyers might be having an interest in or what position they really need to address. We touched on a bit last week, but we got to really sharpen our pencils this week. So I'll begin by looking at Anaheim, a team that's really looking like it can't wait for the end of the season. Now they're 5 games into a winless streak at the moment, and they've had to shuffle things around because they've got a couple of injuries with Brian Getzlaff and Jacob Silfverberg, two guys who are responsible for a lot of the scoring that has gone on here the last few years. Though Silfverberg has taken a dive into the depth part of the roster, they're both key pieces. They'll be missing, and they've had to shuffle the deck a little bit. And two guys that I'm looking at in terms of trade possibilities are both pending UFAs, veterans on the squad. We already saw one defenseman move. We could see another one in Hampus Lindholm, AJ. He's a guy who fits the profile of a top four defender and a guy who can help the power play for a team that's looking for assistance in that or depth in that space. And Rickard Rakell is a guy who can play up or down your lineup. He's played anywhere from first line to fourth line minutes in Anaheim. And so those are the two guys that I think they're going to try and shop around at the trade deadline by Monday. I expect one or both of them to be gone from this sunny locale.
Well, in Arizona, I mean, I think everybody is on the trade block there with limited exceptions here. Obviously, you know, we generally highlight the guys with 1, maybe 2 years left on their deal. So that would, you know, put Phil Kessel, Louis Erickson, Nick Ritchie would be a 2-year rental, Riley Nash, Alex Galchenyuk, Anton Strahlman. But the biggest name that I've been seeing still linked to a move is Jacob Chychrun, who's dealing with an injury. But despite that, reportedly both still Boston, especially is interested in another team as well that's suddenly eluding me. But Chychrun drawing interest from multiple teams, despite the fact that he's dealing with that knee injury. So that's really interesting that they're still looking at it. I think the hard part for any team trying to bring him in is when are you getting him back, right? But ultimately, these are going to be playoff teams that, you know, that's the priority. You want the guy ready for the playoffs. And so that'll be the key. But I would expect Arizona to sell maybe more than one piece as they head into the trade deadline on Monday, with Chychrun likely being the focal point.
And look at the Boston Bruins. They're one of the hottest teams in the last few weeks, AJ. They certainly closed the gap on the top three teams in the Atlantic Division, making a 4-team race all of a sudden. And they're doing it with holes both on their defense and at forward. They're going to be looking to address a top four situation because I think Mike Riley is kind of miscast in the top four role there. I see him more as a third pairing guy. And they have certainly got depth options there with Derek Forbert and Connor Clifton. but I don't think he's a guy that should be in their top four mix if they can get a guy. Maybe Hampus Lindholm is a nice fit, a good puck-carrying guy to go along with Charlie McAvoy in that vein, because the rest of the guys are more noted for the defensive side of the puck. And up front offensively, I think they could look for an upgrade on that second line. If they could upgrade at center over Eric Halla or Charlie Coyle, I think that would be something of a priority for them, because those guys have been bounced around all season long in that second line situation, not really holding on to it or grabbing it and making their own for the whole season. So there is a bit of a doubt there in my mind that they can't stay the status quo in that top six. So those are two areas that I think they're looking to address. In the past week, they've had Jeremy Swayman coming up with another two wins. Maybe they've got their goalie of the future here. Quietly, he came on the scene and he's outperformed his counterpart there by miles all season long. And the other guy got a 5-year extension. So I think there's got to be a little bit of a Spockian eye when you look at Linus Ullmark, who has been outdueled by a raw rookie, I would say. And Swayman, full value for what he's done this season.
Yeah, Paul, just add, you know, from everything that I've seen, it seems like Boston is, you know, in on Chychrun. And then if it doesn't work or they're too concerned about the injury, then Hampus Lindholm will be the secondary option there. So I definitely think, like you said, a D-man is a priority here. In Buffalo, they potentially will have a defenseman available. Colin Miller is a name that's been tossed around. Now, he's been sidelined with an injury for a while here, but by all accounts, he's set to get back in action for them tomorrow. So that's a really good timing for them. If Miller can come back, play a game, maybe show where his game is at right now after that absence, he will definitely be a candidate as well. And then another name I've seen out there is actually Craig Anderson, 40 years of age. He's obviously not going to win the Stanley Cup with Buffalo. Picked up two wins this last week with just three goals allowed, so he's playing really well. His contract is minimal, $750,000, so pretty much any team in the league could fit him in. So that'll be another one to watch, is to see if they move Craig Anderson before Monday, you know, where he might end up. There's a couple of teams that have been linked to possibly needing backup netminders. Maybe your Leafs want to go with a different Anderson as their netminder. Yeah. What definitely two players to watch, but obviously Buffalo being heavy sellers heading into the deadline.
AJ, Carolina has gone to the top of the standings in the NHL this season, and on merit, they have a lot of skill up front. They have a nice group of defensemen, and they have a rejuvenated Freddie Anderson in goal, who's had an outstanding season and is in the Vezina Trophy discussion, at least if Shesterkin continues his recent stumble. He opens the door for some competition, because he's been a runaway guy, a leader in the clubhouse almost. But I look at the Carolina roster, partner, and I see that they might like to take a look at an upgrade on their second line. Yep, they have wingers like Jordan Martinook, Nino Niederreiter, Martin Netzkatch. All of those guys have been in and out of the second line situation. And I think that there's an opportunity to upgrade the six pack up there. And I like the development of Andrei Svechnikov. He's now a fixture on the top line with Aho, and they're reunited. Aho's reunited with Teravainen, and he had a very nice week. Aho did to lead the team in scoring with three goals. But they're looking to augment this offense a little bit. And they had a bit of a worry with the Tony DeAngelo situation. He was on the IR for a bit, but I understand that he's going to be coming off it soon and may even suit up against the Maple Leafs in that clash tomorrow night here in Toronto. So that's a bit of a burden off their backs. But it may be a clear signal, too, that they might want to take a look at getting a little more depth on their back end, too. So an opportunity for a couple more moves, just as Boston before with the Carolina Hurricanes.
Well, Calgary, as you remember, already made some waves when they brought in Tyler Toffoli. And what really is, you know, considering he's got this year plus two more, that's really more of a hockey deal than a trade deadline rental. So they're going to be pretty limited, I think, on where they're looking. Now, they have still been tied to maybe trying to bring a defenseman in. You look at their lineup right now, and there's certainly, you know, some need there. Oliver Shillington has been really good for them, but he's been very quiet of late in terms of production. Rasmus Anderson is a guy that's been holding it down, but you could certainly see how another person could fit in here. And one name that I've heard linked to them, although he's been linked to seemingly half a dozen different clubs, is Ben Chiarot. We'll talk a little bit more about him when we get to Montreal and other possible destinations, but I do think he'd be a nice fit here and give them some more options. They really don't need to address their forward concerns after getting to Foley. And certainly the goaltending has been solid with Markstrom, who picked up another two wins this week, including a shutout.
AJ, in Chicago, we'll begin with the goaltending situation because Marc-Andre Fleury holds all the cards right now. It's up to him whether he wants to move to a contender or if essentially finish up the rest of his contract obligation in Chicago this season and become a UFA next year if he wants to extend his career or maybe continue it in Chicago with an extension. Who knows? But the ball's certainly in his court, and right along with him is Kevin Lankinen, a pending UFA. I don't think they're going to have both of these guys in the fold next year, so maybe we'll wait and see in the offseason if they sign Lankinen to a long-term deal. It could be certainly shouldn't be a big dollar deal, but it should be also a signal that Marc-Andre Fleury may not return. So there's a lot to unpack there in the goaltending situation. And Fleury's been linked with a number of contending teams if he should choose to make a playoff run this year. And who wouldn't want him in the fold? If you have some goaltending issues, this guy is definitely an upgrade over a lot of situations that are in front of some playoff-bound teams. And then up front, we can put the notion of Patrick Kane being dangled. I raised that a week or two ago, and I think I'm going to downplay it because I don't see him moving. It's a big ticket item, a $10 million plus, but I was just wondering if a team would like to get him for essentially two playoff runs this year and next. That would be the attraction if they could find a way for Chicago to retain some money that he might be on the move, but I really don't see that now. He added another 4 assists to his ledger, just continues to chug along there offensively. And it's nice to see Jonathan Toews participating in the offense too. AJ, 2 more goals and 1 assist for him. But the name that confuses me, I don't quite get Brendan Hagel being dangled. I mean, he's got 2 more years at $1.5 million cap hit and has really developed a scoring touch this year that nobody really forecast. And he had 3 goals and 1 helper last week to help lead this team. So I don't really understand that he'd be on the trade deadline. But I do get that one of the guys that's a pending UFA and a veteran defenseman, Calvin DeHaan, is a guy that I expect should be moved by the Hawks and should be of interest to a number of teams. He's one of those guys that's more of a stay-at-home type. He has some offensive skill, but I think he's more known as a shutdown D. And if you're looking for help in that regard, he's a solid candidate to be moved, in my estimation.
For Columbus, the focal point is going to be, of course, Max Domi, who you have long been lobbying your Maple Leafs to bring in.
Makes perfect sense.
I actually agree with you. I think he would be a good fit with the Leafs. He's got a last year of a $5.3 million contract. So obviously they would have to probably retain some salary. They can retain up to half of the salary. I do think it would be somewhat of an indication that, bringing in Domi was a bit of a bust, although Josh Anderson's numbers haven't been great in Montreal either. And just interesting, the names that are linked together here when you consider Montreal got Domi from Arizona for Alex Galchenyuk. Neither guy did much on those teams. Then Domi gets traded again to Columbus for Josh Anderson. So word of caution maybe for those Leafs fans that, sometimes bringing in Max Domi isn't always the best move. But I do think he would add to that lineup and definitely be a good piece for the Leafs. As far as Columbus goes, there's not any big names that really jump out other than Domi, as far as who could go. Gustav Nyquist, maybe. 5.5 is the cap hit, signed for 1 more year. He's 32. But I don't really see a need for them to try and get rid of him quite yet, since they have that other year. So those are really the only two names that stood out to me on this Columbus squad.
AJ, Colorado is another team that's loaded for bear. We already talked about two trades that they made. I'm certain they're going to make at least one more, and I think it's going to be an impact forward. We talked about Claude Giroux as a name that could be that guy, and I'm looking for him to go up to either Florida or Colorado, as I said. But you look at Colorado's situation on the wings, and that's where you think, okay, maybe they will definitely upgrade, because while Val Nichushkin has had a very nice year, career best, I would say, he's locked in a first-line role here because Gabriel Landeskog is out maybe for weeks. And so they've got to really consider his situation as well in terms of how high they go, in terms of quality that they want to bring in, if there's any concern about Landeskog for sure. But all things that we know so far are that Kent Landeskog should be all right for the start of the playoffs and maybe come back sooner, but it's just a signal that this team really wants to augment their top six, because behind Nichushkin, I can mention Alex Newhook is penciled in as the second line left wing, and you know that they want to upgrade over that. So look for Colorado to be focused in that regard. I think they have a lot of pieces on defense now with the addition of Manson. I don't think that that's a big concern, though maybe they could get a low-end rental for a low draft pick too to fix up that situation. And in goal, I think they're in good shape with Kemper and Frank Hughes. Kemper's had an outstanding season, and he added to it with another great week last week.
For Dallas, look, if you had asked me a week ago, the two names that would have come to mind were Braden Holtby and John Klingberg as potential trade targets. But by all accounts, neither guy is going to be leaving at this point. Klingberg, for his part, they're likely going to have to need him because Miro Heiskanen is considered out indefinitely week to week with mononucleosis. So it's unclear when he might be back. So you don't really trade Klingberg when you're missing, you know, your other, you know, top two defensemen. The only thing that, you know, I had seen is if they could get an offer big enough, early enough, where they could then go out and bring somebody else in, that they would consider moving Klingberg, but there's so many moving parts there that it just seems unlikely. Similarly, Braden Holtby, who has been dealing with an injury but is working his way back right now, likely has to stick around in Dallas because Anton Khudobin underwent season-ending hip surgery. He obviously would have been the replacement as the backup to Jake Oettinger if they had traded Holtby. So, like I said, a week ago, I think both these guys are on the block, but now it looks like neither will be going anywhere.
In terms of what's gone on in Detroit, most recently a six-game winless streak, so that's the bad news. But the good news is Lucas Raymond continues to score and lead this team offensively almost with another three goals this past week. And as well, Moritz Seider continues to make a case as the best defenseman in this rookie class as well. That's the good news. And the other good news is Jakub Vrana finally made his season debut and got the two goals in out of the first four games that he's played for this squad, and is another reminder of another good piece that they've added in the top six here offensively. And when all hands on deck are in place for Detroit, you're going to have to outscore this team, and they've got some talent there. On the back end, they're going to be looking at possibly parting ways with Nick Leddy. I think that's a guy that they should dangle out there. He's a guy that's had some offensive upside throughout his career and also plays well in the defensive zone. So a good two-way defenseman, veteran, who would solidify and add certain qualities to any team almost that is looking for it. And he's the pending UFA, as I mentioned, with a lot of pedigree. So look for him to be on the move in that situation. And Gagne is another guy, veteran forward, 3 points last week. Just shows that he has the ability to score, but he's been more of a depth player. He's played certainly in top six in his career, but more of a bottom six type guy. Good size, good skill, and a lot of experience would help bottom sixes around the league. So those are two players that I think Detroit could easily move this week.
As far as potential acquisitions for the Edmonton Oilers, look, I think it's going to come just simply from getting guys back into the lineup. Jesse Puljujärvi is set to play tomorrow. If and when they get Ryan Nugent-Hopkins back, that'll be a big boost to them. Chris Russell potentially on the back end is going to get ready for them tomorrow as well. So really, those are kind of the big additions that they would make. And then, of course, they signed Evander Kane earlier in the season. So I don't expect Edmonton to really be doing that much in terms of additions. They would need, kind of minimal guys, and it'd be kind of just holding down the fort until they get fully healthy. I think all the pieces are there for them to make the playoffs this year. Other than we've talked, both of us, Paul, have talked about netminding being a problem, but it's hard to argue against upgrading your nets when Mikko Koskinen has 3 wins in his last 3 outings with 9 goals allowed there. Mike Smith is going to get the start for their next game, but I think overall, they obviously feel comfortable in the netminding, and Koskinen has been playing better.
In Florida, this team just continues to roll along. They were undefeated in 3 starts last week, 2 wins and overtime loss, and the offense continues to carry the day. Huberto, 6 points. Verhaeghe, another 2 goals. Vetrano left the team after scoring 2 goals last week, so he left on a high. Reinhardt, 3 goals and a helper. Barkov with 3 assists, so everything's picking and boffing offensively. But they do need one more piece up front. And, of course, we've talked about Claude Giroux. But there are other guys that, maybe Raquel makes a fit over there. Certainly, you got to look at maybe Kali Yarncroft from Seattle is a guy that will probably be on the move and could help bolster the six-man attack in the top 2 lines here. And Domi would be a nice fit. So there's a whole number of different ways they can look. Andrew Kopp is another guy. These are all going to be considerations for all the teams looking for forward, and any one of them would be a nice fit to the Florida situation. That's definitely the area of need that I've identified. I like the look of their defense, so I'm not too concerned about that. And they're going to trust Bobrovsky and Knight in goal for the playoffs, and I think they're hoping that Bobrovsky just continues doing what he's doing. He has an outstanding season, finally looking like the value that's on his paycheck every couple of weeks.
The other team that I forgot was tied to Jacob Chychrun is the Los Angeles Kings. They were linked to bringing him in, and that makes a lot of sense when you check out their depth chart over on rotowire.com. Cheap plug for that. When you consider they've got Edler, Doughty, Walker, Matt Roy now, all on IR. Thomas Bjornfoot is dealing with an injury as well. So, they're top 4 right now. Ole Mata, Jordan Spence, Sean Durzi, and Jacob Mover. I think you need some more help based on that group. And then if you can combine, getting some of those other guys back. Similarly, on the front end, it's more like Edmonton here. Like if they could get Dustin Brown, Victor Arvidsson, Andreas Athanasiou, Brendan Lemieux, like if they can get all those guys healthy, that could potentially, help them make their case for a potential playoff run here. I mean, they're obviously sitting second right now in the Pacific. With the number of injuries that they have, it may be hard to hold on to that spot right now. And adding a piece like Jacob Chychrun would be a huge stopgap for the time being.
In Minnesota, they have shuffled the deck at center. They've got Ryan Hartman's had an outstanding year, locked in at number one center role. But Frederick Gaudreau and Joel Eriksson-Ek have volleyed back and forth for that second line situation. Now you can throw Tyson Yost into the mix. But I wonder if they'll be looking to get another piece in there. And the guy that I'm thinking about is the aforementioned Andrew Kopp to bring some more size. And this team seems to like them big up front. And they have a huge average size among their forward ranks, and Kopp would only add to that. So I see the dotted lines connecting there for a team that right now is the healthiest among all NHL clubs. They went 1-1-1 last week. And, man, Matthew Boldy's been found money for this team, AJ. 3 more goals for the rookie who is really climbing up the ranks in terms of the scoring race for the rookie leadership. Nobody's talking about him as a serious candidate yet. But if he puts another 20 games together like he has so far, he'll be right in the mix there. That's how good he's been. Kirill Kaprizov with 2 goals. Zuccarello with 2 goals and 1 assist. Fiala with 3 assists. But here's the concern for this team, AJ. Looking ahead to next year, they have to be really concerned about what they're going to do with Kevin Fiala. I don't see how they're going to be able to keep this guy. So he might he won't be a guy that is dealt at the trade deadline. They're going to probably sink or swim with him this season to give him the best shot to advance. But I don't know how they retain him in the offseason, and I think he's going to be one of the biggest names moved in the summer. So a swan song looking like it's in place for Ciala in Minnesota.
Well, I'll just counter real quick on that, Paul. They do have Alex Goligoski counting $5 million against the cap. Getting him off next year would certainly help. They've got a buried cap in terms of Victor Rask as well. The problem is, as soon as you say those good things, I'm sure both of us looking over at our friends at Cap Friendly.
Yeah.
They're dead cap hit for buyouts on Parisi and Suter jumped from $4.7 million this year to $12.7 million next year.
That's where I was going.
I rescind what I was saying, Paul. I don't know how they're going to keep Kevin Fiala when you're paying Parisi and Suter a combined $12.7 million for cap hit. So I stand corrected, Paul. I had not scrolled far enough down to be reminded of that. Look, I'll lead us into Montreal then. We have mentioned Ben Chiarot already. He was scratched from their game last night to avoid him getting hurt. So he's clearly going to be moved. Has been linked to a number of teams, including, we mentioned him with Calgary, Florida, St. Louis tied to him as well. And then, of course, probably the biggest one that we've seen out there is the Hurricanes, who were reportedly in on Josh Manson, but missed out on him. And so potentially are going to go after Ben Chiarot here instead. I've seen Arturi Lehkonen tied to a potential move as well. I'm not as sold on that being a good decision by them when you consider that, you know, he's going to be an RFA instead of a UFA. So they don't lose him outright. He is only 26 years of age. So still got some time to, you know, continue to play and develop. So we'll see what happens. But I don't know that I personally would make that move if I was running the Montreal Canadiens. But, of course, a new GM is running the show, a new coach. So, really, I don't think anybody should feel totally safe that you're going to be around next year, except for maybe, I don't know, Jeff Petrie. Like, that's probably about it.
And in Jersey, AJ, I mean, they're looking ahead to the future to develop what they can. They have some question marks that need to be answered over time. Jimmy Vesey is a pending UFA and could be a spare part that maybe goes somewhere else, but he's jumped around all over the place in his career. The two names that are getting a little bit of traction in terms of possible trade talk, there's some big money attached to both of them. When you look at PK Subban, a team's going to have to look at the hoping that that the Devils would retain half as much of his salary as they can, up to $4.5 million, I think they are eligible because he has a $9 million cap hit. And bringing his veteran savvy, I mean, he's lost a step. We know that, and the offensive skills have eroded a little bit. But I still think he could be a real presence if he's motivated, and we've seen him play when he's motivated. He gives a different look than what he has in Jersey. He doesn't seem very, very happy there, to be quite honest, not fitting in, as he's on the wrong end of a career, the downside of his career, when really this team's got a young core up front and around him on the blue line. He's almost a bit of a misfit here. So I think if he could find greener pastures that where he fits in more alongside people who are near his age group in a good core, he could be a real nice piece. And then the other piece on the back end that is more intriguing for me is Damon Severson. I followed this guy from the time he was in the AHL and got a lot of looks at him, and I really liked his game. And really, he's starting to put it together the last couple of years, and still not the big dog here when you consider they have other options among the defenders to take the big power play role, looking at you, Dougie Hamilton, when you're healthy. And then Ryan Graves is another piece in that regard. So Severson's got a cap hit of $4.1 million this year and next. So a team would get him potentially for two playoff runs. If the rumors are correct, though, he is available on the New Jersey roster.
Down in Music City, the Predators, I really have not seen them linked to really anybody. You know, it could be a factor of them not need. There's not any glaring needs as far as I'm concerned. They obviously have solid defensemen. That's been a staple of the Predators forever. UC Saros is their number one guy. You know, maybe they would consider a cheap backup, maybe like a Craig Anderson to come in. Rittich has had some struggles at points during the season. And maybe a middle six forward if they felt like they needed that as well. But I really don't see any huge glaring spots. And maybe that's why I haven't seen them mentioned in any kind of trade speculation. Paul, I don't know if you've seen anything different, but that's what I'm seeing out of them. I think they're going to ride for the most part with the team that they have that's being led by that top line right now of Philip Forsberg, Ryan Johansson, and Matt Duchene, who's really had a resurgent season this year.
Well, that's because they've got resurgent seasons from a couple of guys on this roster that they maybe feel confident saying, let's go with what we have and take a run at this thing. And you know what? They're going to be a tough out because they've got the solid goaltending. They've got one of the premier defensemen in the league. They have a rebirth from a couple of guys up front that we've talked about at length, and Duchene and Johansson, who's leading the pack offensively, and Philip Forsberg, one of the best snipers in hockey. So a lot to like about what this team has. I could see them maybe tinkering around the edges if they can do it on the cheap, but that's about it. And like you, I haven't heard any other rumors about them. In terms of the Islanders, this team is kind of playing some of its best hockey of the year right now, AJ. They went 3-0-1 last week. And Anders Lee is a guy that I'll talk about people who are nearing the trade deadlines in their own fantasy pools. This is a guy, if you're looking at upgrading your offense, this is a guy who's on fire right now. And he was among the top scorers with 6 goals last week on a resurgent Islander team that's finally looking like it was expected to play all season by you and me. Not the worst ad in the world if you can pry him off a non-contending team in your fantasy league. So there's a little bit of a fantasy hockey tip there specifically. And you look at the rest of the offense, I'm telling you, they're getting it from all kinds. Brock Nelson, 3 goals and 2 assists for one of his best weeks. So the same thing that I said applies to him. And Josh Bailey with 7 points, Bovilia with 6 assists. They filled the net last week, in fact. If you're looking at a trade piece here, I think it's going to be a depth defenseman like Scott Mayfield. AJ is the guy that I'm looking at. He's a third-pairing guy here and would be a third-pairing guy at best in most other circumstances. One of those guys who's really good at clearing the front of the net. And, he fits the Ben Chiarot profile, I guess. He's Ben Chiarot light because he comes in much cheaper and probably would cost less in terms of acquisition fees. But you got to deal with a Sly Fox there and Lou Lamoriello, and he can drive up the price tag in a trade negotiation.
Well, the other New York club, the Rangers, I think probably made maybe their one potential move here. And if they do anything else, I think it'll be very similar, a kind of tinkering around the edges. You have to remember Kaapo Kakko, Sammy Blais, and Kevin Rooney are all on IR. So those would be, depth additions. And that's maybe the one thing that you would think that they need, maybe some more depth forwards. It's probably why they went out and got Frank Vetrano. They're set in goal. Their defense is outstanding. And look, they have $5 million available, 5.8 actually available in cap space. But you got to think beyond this season. They've got Adam Fox still making less than $1 million on his entry-level contract. That's going to jump to $9.5 million next season. So they, have to think about what they can make work and what they can fit in next year as far as that goes. So I think this is another team that if they do something else, it'll be very similar to the Frank Vetrano deal. And somebody probably that's on an expiring contract, maybe they'd take somebody with one more year left.
And in Ottawa, it's obviously a selling environment for them. And I'll dispense with what they did last week. It was a decent week, 1 win and 2 losses. But the decent part was that they got performances from some of the signature pieces as usual, but a couple of guys who've been sliding in prior weeks. Norris and Brown up front combined for a total of 7 points. Norris with 4 goals, Brown with 2 goals and 1 assist. So you got to be happy that they finally have shown a bit of a return to form, and you wonder if it can be a long-term thing. Certainly Connor Brown, one of the leaders of this team in the dressing room, hasn't had the offensive upside that he had last year, and maybe he'll finish strong here. Artem Zub's another guy that I think is a lock to stick around here. Got three more assists last week, but really a good presence in the defensive end there and a good piece that they can build around on the back end with him and Shabbat. And then among the pieces that are available in the trade situations that might surround them. In the Nets, Anton Forsberg is a guy who's been rumored to be on the move. He's a bargain in terms of the price tag, $900,000 cap hit, and could be a player that signs an extension wherever he lands as a solid number two or a 1B would be an ideal candidate in that regard. I think Ottawa's more committed to Philip Gustafsson, and they definitely have a lot of money tied up in Matt Murray, who's sidelined right now. So they would have to find a depth piece from their minor leagues to replace Forsberg, but that's a minor concern. He would be more valuable as a trade piece, I think, at this time. And I also think that maybe they got another piece that they can look at in Nick Paul up front. He's a guy that can play up and down a lineup. He's a low cap hit again at $1.35 million and has shown the ability to be a streaky scorer. And when he's on, he's worthy of a top six spot on a number of teams.
Obviously, in Philadelphia, Claude Giroux is going to dominate the news cycle. And everything seems to be pointing to either Colorado or Florida. Myself, I lean towards Colorado, I think is where he's going to end up. But again, I think both teams are still in play. They're making moves to try and build cap space to try and fit him in there. Obviously, for Colorado, they can play that lightning playbook and potentially have Landeskog on IR until the playoffs. Obviously, Vegas using that same ability as well right now with Mark Stone on LTIR. But outside of Claude Giroux, I do think, you know, maybe some of their defensemen, they've got four guys that are going to be UFAs next year that could draw some interest. Justin Braun, Keith Yandle, Kevin Connaughton, and Nick Steeler. Obviously, Yandle and Braun, probably the bigger names. Their cap hits are pretty manageable. They're both going to be, you know, they're both 35 years of age. So you are getting them on the back half of their careers. And I think they could both offer some value to teams out there that are looking to make a push. Marty Jones technically will be a UFA, but I just don't see a team wanting him based on what he's done this year and the struggles he's had in past seasons when with San Jose. So I'd be surprised if there was a team that was calling to acquire him and give something up to bring in Martin Jones right now.
Okay, partner, I'm going to give you something to think about because we're going to talk about Pittsburgh when we come back from our break. I have a name that I'm going to throw out at you, and I'm curious to hear your reaction in terms of a possible acquisition for the Pens and hear, obviously, what you think is in store for your club. But before we go there, let's take a break, and we'll be back with our look at the remaining teams and our DFS plays out of tonight's schedule on RotoWire's podcast with Statsman and AJ. We'll be back right after these messages.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk. But it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
All right, we're back, but let's have another reminder for ways for our listeners to reach out to us during the week. Over to you, AJ.
Yeah, obviously we're talking about a lot of trades here, so we would love to hear what you think about some of the potential trades we've talked about, what trades you think your team should make. We would love to have those discussions with you over on Twitter. You can follow me at AJSchultz24. You can follow Paul, the stats man, at Statsman22. Let's have some trade discussions as we head into Monday over on Twitter.
All right. Well, I'll have a little thing to say about Pittsburgh. They went 2-1 last week. Tristan Jarry picking up the wins, 4 goals against in the 2 outings. So he's looking like he's at the top of his game. Ditto for Chris Letang with 3 helpers. Carter with 3 points, Crosby with 3 points. But I'm thinking there's room for one more addition offensively if they want to take a big swing with their signature pieces. Maybe one last kick at the can, AJ, with this trio of guys that have been key players and your favorite players for the last dozen years, it seems. And I'm going to throw the name Brock Besser out and see if that's a piece that you think that they could fit into their situation and somebody who might fill a real need.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think the ties to Vancouver are real, and they're strong with the fact that Jim Rutherford is running the show over there now. I've seen names like John Marino and Marcus Pettersson both tied to potential moves to Vancouver for either JT Miller, which would be harder to fit in. He's going to be pricier for the Penguins, or Brock Besser. I think either player would be a great addition to the forward group and would address exactly what they need. They need additional scoring, forwards that can play alongside that center core of Crosby, Malkin, and Carter. So, yeah, I love that idea, and hopefully it happens here. In Seattle, look, Mark Giordano likely going to be traded. He's sitting tonight in order to avoid getting hurt. So the first captain in franchise history will now be traded away before the season even winds up. A bit of a surprise there from that side of it. But, you know, he does fit the bill as a veteran defenseman who's on an expiring contract, who obviously would like to go and win somewhere. And so, you know, in some ways, good on Seattle for even being willing to discuss that. Another name for them, too, Cale Yarncroc, has been tossed around. I haven't seen confirmation that he's not going to play tonight, but it's certainly in the mix. So that'll be one to watch. If anybody else other than Giordano sits tonight, it could be an indication that player is potentially on the block and going to be shipped out. So definitely a name to watch and see where it goes. I'm not sure if there's anybody else that really stands out. Marcus Johansson is going to be a UFA as well, so maybe that's a possibility there. But again, the big piece for them will be Mark Giordano.
And AJ, that brings me back into the fold, and I get to talk about which team are we at now?
San Jose.
San Jose, very good. Thank you. I fell asleep there for a bit. San Jose went 2-1 last week. Thomas Hertl is the guy that's in trade talks for this team. He's got a week in the back pocket where he came up with 6 points, 3 goals, and 3 helpers. So that's going to only drive the price tag up should he be moved. Timo Meier is a guy that will be here for the longer haul. 4 points more from him. Nick Bonino, a guy that you are familiar with his time in Pittsburgh, continues to be a serviceable piece here. But all the talk here is about who will be dangled. And I think alongside Hurdle, there's a goalie named James Reimer that I know quite a bit about. And I think he might be a guy that could be moved at the trade deadline too, for a team that's looking for to shore up their goaltending situation, maybe where there's a 1B type who is leading the pack, or a team that's looking for a bit of a boost. And he could certainly provide that in the short term. I'm not sure he can take you on a lengthy playoff run, because he's never done it in his career. But nonetheless, a veteran goalie if teams are looking to shore up that position. So other than that, though, I think it could be a quiet end of the season in San Jose. I'm not sure they have too many other spare parts that would be of interest to too many other teams.
Well, you mentioned two guys there that I'll touch on from stuff that kind of came out today. James Reimer, supposedly tied to your Maple Leafs. They're at least taking a look to see at what his status is. And you mentioned a short-term fix while they potentially just need somebody to get through the next 2 weeks or so. So it would be interesting to see if they pulled the trigger on that. And then Tomas Hertl, going to throw a little bit of water on the trade rumors here, only because reports are that they have made some progress on a potential contract extension. And obviously, if they can get him signed to a longer-term deal here, they're not going to want to trade him. So, again, two situations to watch out for. If those contract talks really fall apart over the next couple of days, then something could obviously change. The St. Louis Blues are the next team we'll talk about. They've been linked to, you know, defensemen. You know, I mentioned Sherratt there. After today's news that Tyler Bozak's going to miss at least four weeks due to injury, I wouldn't be surprised to see them making some calls for depth forwards here and to kind of bolster things. They should get Robert Thomas back from an illness tomorrow, potentially Pavel Buchnevich as well. So that'll certainly help. But with the fact that Bozak's going to miss at least a month, I would expect them to maybe make some calls on some forwards. I think they're set in goal. I actually don't mind their defense as it is right now, but if you can improve it with the right guy, you know, you're always open to that.
This is a team that I'm telling people to watch out for, AJ, just because, you know, they have the injured parts that you mentioned, one long-term potential with Bozak, but two short-terms, and they've moved their forwards from left wing to center to right wing. They've got a lot of guys that can play anywhere up and down the roster. I love the flexibility, and at playoff time, you need to have that nimble aspect to your lineup that allows you that the opportunity to tinker with it. If things aren't going well, they can really shuffle the parts around and not lose anything like other teams might, because they don't have that quality and depth. So something that the Blues do have in their back pocket. I'm in a quandary, though, what they do in net. Ville Husso has clearly outplayed Jordan Binnington, and I think he's the guy that I would go to in game one if the playoffs started at this point. So I would never have admitted that earlier in the season, but Husso looks clearly like the guy right now. In Tampa, you know, they had a losing week. They've lost three of their last four games. But is anybody concerned really about the two-time defending champs? I say no, absolutely not. And the reason is because they still have that quality up front, that quality on the back end, and certainly the best goalie in the world, for my money, in Andrei Vasilevskiy still, until he gets beat in a seven-game series. He's my number one in this league at the moment. And offensively, I think that might be an area where they tinker. They usually do go shopping for guys that can play third line minutes here. I mean, certainly Corey Perry's had a very nice year in this regard, but he was a fourth liner much of last season. And I think that they could do with a bit of an upgrade along that third line, not necessarily pointing the finger at him, but maybe an upgrade over Matthew Joseph as well. Just pushing those guys to play harder when they're on the ice. They're going to give you everything you got, but if they can put more talent on that third and fourth lines, that's where I think the focus will be. I think they're set at every other position. They've got clearly seven guys that can play on the blue line. So maybe they're looking for an eight piece there. So quality up and down, and just looking for a bottom six or bottom pairing guy is the shopping list here.
Well, as Paul will tell you, in Toronto, everybody is going there and wants to play for them. So I'm sure they're in on everybody we've mentioned today, Claude Giroux, Ben Sherratt. I'm sure they're going to try and get both Chychrun and Klingberg in there, Hampus Lindholm. Just, you know, all available players, all roads lead to Toronto. But, Paul, before I kick it over to you, I will toss out one serious name that I have heard potentially linked to the Maple Leafs, and that's Jacob Middleton from San Jose. It comes in at a 725 cap hit. He's played minutes with Burns and Carlson, so he is that kind of shutdown guy that can pair with a more offensively minded player. In addition to Toronto, has been linked to Tampa Bay and Boston as well. How would you feel about Jacob Middleton?
Well, he adds more size and a little more bite, and they need both of those qualities for sure. But I think they're going to aim a little bit higher in terms of the quality, overall quality of player that they want to plug in on the back end. And I think the more I think about it, the more it makes sense. Mark Giordano seems to be an ideal fit here. His longtime partner, TJ Brody's already here, and he's been magnificent for the Maple Leafs this season. And I can only imagine that his game would even find another higher level if he could play with his longtime partner again. I don't think the price tag will be high on Giordano like it is on a couple of the other signature top defensemen that are out there in the marketplace. So a Toronto native, he has a chance to finish up his career in Toronto with his longtime defense partner. I think it makes too much sense, and it won't cost a lot. They have about $5 million, just shy of $5 million, to fit under the cap, and the residual of his cap might eat up a big chunk of that, but I still think that they have another move in them because they need to shore up. You can make a case for them shoring up all three, forward, defense, and in net. They're probably only going to be able to do two of them. If you say maybe Giordano is a guy, a candidate, then do they look at a net mining upgrade with James Reimer, like you suggested? There's a number of ways where it can go, and you're right. A lot of names are being linked to this team because it depends on really which direction they take. Can you imagine if they traded away a guy like Alex Kerfoot and freed up his $3.4 million in cap space? Then the gloves are really off and they could go wild and could really be a focal point of the trade deadline. So I'm waiting with bated breath to see which direction they go in at the deadline, but there's no limit to what they could do. They could even pick up some long-term injury help too, even for next year. Can you imagine if this team took on Shea Weber's contract, for instance? They could go crazy for the next few seasons. It'd be wild times here, I'm sure. But anyway, enough about that and the Maple Leaf situation. Let's go to Vancouver and see what's happening there. AJ, this is a team, like you mentioned, their new president, Jim Rutherford, has strong ties to Pittsburgh. I think you're right. We're going to see something of a dance between those two teams at the trade deadline. The Canucks, though, they're still entertaining faint hopes about making the playoffs because they did go 2-1-1 in four games last week, and their players are playing very well. Offensive players are playing very well. JT Miller has been the best scorer in hockey over the last month, you can say, with another 10 points to his record last week. I don't think that guy's moving anywhere, AJ. I don't know. I think those trade rumors should just be shut down. He's too important to what's going on here, and they got to find a way to keep him longer term, in my opinion. Quinn Hughes, another signature piece back here, 5 more points. Tanner Pearson, a guy who's played third line minutes elsewhere, really finding a home in Vancouver with 4 points as well. The tough news here is Elias Pettersson injured again, and I feel bad for this guy because he should be the offensive leader of this team, but really can't stay healthy this season, and that could be something that they're really concerned about, keeping this guy healthy. It's not a long-term hurt this time around, thank goodness, but it's a concern nonetheless, the amount of time that he's missed this season. So some concerns about the Canucks long-term, but they'll be a player on Monday.
In Las Vegas, I don't think there's really much they can do at this point. They're already stretching the limits of LTIR after having brought in Jack Eichel. So I would be surprised to see them really doing much of anything. Now that all of that depends on, it's certainly possible with the number of they do have a lot of guys on injured reserve right now. So it's possible they could get a little more LTIR relief with some of those other guys as well and then make a move. But I think things are going to be complicated enough for them trying to, if Stone does come back before the very end of the season and how they make that work. The problem is that, Robin Leonard is now on injured reserve. He has already missed 3 games, so there's no clear indication that, he's on IR for, how long he's going to be out. The problem is Laurent Brossoit and Logan Thompson are not standing netminders. It's why Vegas is on a five-game losing streak right now. Leonard played in one of those games. I'll give him a little bit of credit. It's not all the goaltending when you consider they were on the road for all five of those games. They also have a number of injuries, both to forwards and defensemen. But if there was a spot where maybe they should be looking to address something, for me, it's the netminding.
And AJ, in Washington, this team might be one of the quieter contending teams at the trade deadline simply because they are wafer thin in terms of the flexibility under the salary cap at this stage in the season. And the best news that they might get is just from the infirmary, where Carl Hagelin and Lars Eller are out. These are two veteran guys who've had the ability to be part of long playoff runs here and elsewhere in their career. And that could be the biggest boost that this club gets, because otherwise they've got a lot to be thankful for. They've still got the 1-2 punch at center that is the envy of the National Hockey League. But when they get Lars Eller in as the third line center, that's a very nice look in the top nine up front. They might be looking at an upgrade of fourth line center if they could probably tinker around the very edges of the trade deadline frenzy. But other than that, I think this team stands pat and takes their best swing with a pretty deep roster offensively. And there might be a bit of a battle for the rest of the season in terms of the net mining situation. Vinek Vanacek is nosed ahead of Ilya Samsonov in that race. Had a very nice week last week with two wins and a total of six goals against. That's not great, but still the wins are what counts, and he's been getting them regularly and is nosed ahead of Samsonov in that heated battle in the back end.
Finally, in Winnipeg, we're talking about sellers here, and two names that come to mind are Andrew Kopp. He's 27 years old, 3.64 is the cap hit, so he probably has a little bit more intrigue. But I do think Paul Stastny, who's been moved multiple times in the last several years to try and find a winner, I think could be a candidate there as well. If Winnipeg's willing to hold on to the cap for either one of these guys, you could get them for under two in terms of cap for the rest of this year. And that would certainly help make a run. So I think those are two guys that should be kind of on the radar for trade pieces coming out of Winnipeg. Other than that, I don't really see them moving any of their defensemen. Most of them are pretty young, signed to longer term contracts, and I think they're probably pretty happy with what they have on the blue line to begin with.
And I want to shout out Kyle Connor, AJ. I mean, if he was playing in a hotbed in the eastern part of the landscape, there'd be a lot more chatter about what this guy's done. He's almost at 40 goals on the season. He's been a centerpiece to my teams in fantasy league, season-long leagues all year. He got 8 points for the club last week to lead their attack. I just want to recognize what he's doing out there is not getting the press that I think it deserves when you talk about one of the league's leading snipers. Now let's turn our attention to the DFS portion of our program, where we put together our FanDuel lineups and DraftKings lineups ahead of a four-game slate tonight. It's a narrow one, AJ, so I'm sure there's going to be a lot of pairs of players on both of our rosters. I'm kind of curious where you lean in the building of your DraftKings lineup ahead of tonight's games.
Well, for me, I'm going to go heavy into Tampa Bay, but not from the onset here. Going to use a bit of I'm going heavier than Tampa than even I thought. I'm going to start off with Anthony Cirelli, 2,900 for Tampa Bay. They have just a great matchup tonight going up against Seattle, who has really struggled on the penalty kill. And in general on the season, Cirelli going to fill a top six role for them tonight, playing alongside Point and Palat. So for that low, low price tag, I think he makes a lot of sense. My other center, I'm going to deviate here from my, all Tampa team and go with Elias Lindholm for Calgary. 6,500 is the price tag. He had been on an 8-game point streak prior to missing out on that in their last game. I don't think it'll take too long for him to get going. Again, good matchup with New Jersey. They're playing at home. I think it's a good spot to use him. Now is where my Lightning stack really comes in heavily here. Starts with Steven Stamkos, who's going to play on the wing, or rather going to play at center. For DraftKings, you do have to put him in the lineup as a winger, but I think that just works out for you. You get him at 6,600. I'll pair him up with linemate Nikita Kucherov at 8,000 and even take the third member of that line, Alex Killorn, for 3,400. Part of the reason for targeting these guys is that week-week penalty kill that Seattle has right now. Kucherov, Killorn, Stamkos are all on that number one unit. So I think it's a good opportunity to use those guys. Defensively, it's going to be more of the same. For 6,800, I use Victor Hedman. That gives me four of the five pieces of that top power play unit. Don't really need to go into more on that. I'll go back to Calgary with my other defenseman. Admittedly, a bit of a punt play here, kind of just hoping Calgary has a good game is my reason for going there. I'm going to use Nikita Zadorov, 25,000. Again, I don't have, you know, he hasn't put up a point in his last five games. Decent number of shots over that stretch. He's had nine. It's not great. It's okay. He's had 13 hits. So there's some floor value there. Really what I'm just hoping is he happens to be on the ice when one of his high-powered offensive line mates or teammates picks up a goal and he maybe passes it to him. So yeah, a bit of a punt play, but we're going to roll with it here. Andre Vasilevskiy will be my netminder. That's pretty straightforward based on how heavily I've been taking Tampa, 8,400 for him. And then my last utility spot, I'm going to go with Jake DeBrusk for Boston, 4,800. The Bruins going up against Minnesota, but DeBrusk has been back on that first line with Marchand and Bergeron. I think that's a good spot to get him in there. Obviously, with, you know, not really a big power play guy for them. He's not on the first unit. He should see minutes with the second unit, but hoping to capitalize on that pairing with Marchand and Bergeron. So that's what I did for my lineup. I went very heavy into the Tampa Bay Lightning for this one. So it's going to be a boom or bust lineup. Obviously, if Tampa struggles tonight for any number of reasons, that one's not going to pay off. But if they have a big game, it could certainly work out in my favor. Paul, what does FanDuel look like for you tonight?
Well, I'm curious to get your reaction on some of the prices when I quote them, because you got a few guys that you talked about that will be in my lineup as well. I like the Tampa heavy stack, and I'm going with three pieces there as well offensively. And I'm also sprinkling in a little bit of Ottawa, though, because I think that they're at home tonight in a good matchup against Columbus. So those are the kind of cornerstones of my club. And I'm on the other side of the Boston-Minnesota thing. I'm taking a couple of Minnesota players catching Boston on the second of back-to-backs. It was a grueling game last night for the Hawks. The Bruins in Chicago, they poured a ton of shots on goal. And I think they used up a lot of energy. And on the second of back-to-backs in Minnesota, that's a tough out for them, I think, tonight. So I'll begin my look at the FanDuel roster with Ryan Hartman at center for $5,800. I got a first-line center who's got a part of a team that's been clicking offensively, particularly his unit. So I think that's a low price tag for a guy who's averaging over 13 FanDuel points per game this season. And I expect him to have a good night tonight. Then we go into the Tampa portion of my lineup, where I'm picking Braden Point, AJ, for $7,900. Consider what he's worth on your list, but on mine, he came in at $7,900. And I'm going with him as the lone piece of the second line. I've got two-thirds of their first line also in my roster. And Steven Stamkos, also listed as a winger in my setup, AJ, set $8,200 as price tag for the captain tonight. And his winger, longtime winger, Alex Killorn, also comes in north of $5,000, $5,900, in fact. So that's some significant money paid out for Tampa's players. So I had to go cheap elsewhere, and I did so. In terms of the utility forwards that I picked up, I've got two-thirds of Ottawa's second line in play tonight. Tim Stützle for $5,100. He's been on a pretty nice run offensively this past couple of weeks, and his running mate for much of that is Alex Formanton, coming in at $4,600. I think they're going to outscore Columbus and maybe shut them down defensively. I'm counting on that because I'm also putting Anton Forsberg in net for $7,500. I kind of had to go low on the goalie options because I spent so much on Tampa. I mean, you got discounts on some of the players that I paid up for, AJ. I'm lamenting that a little bit. And I round out my squad with a couple of defensemen that should be in good spots tonight. Jared Spurgeon is the power play quarterback for Minnesota, and I get him for $5,000. Anytime you get a power play quarterback for $5,000 on the blue line, I'll take him. And it's a good spot for him tonight against, as I say, what could be a tired Boston crew that rolls in. And then I have to fill in my roster with a guy that's not part of any of stacks that I've used to date in this roster. So I had to go outside the box, and where better than to pick up a piece of the Calgary game. And I'm going with their first line of defense and Noah Hanifin for $4,900 to round out my squad. So that's my look on the FanDuel side, AJ. And man, oh man, we're getting into the one of the most exciting weeks in the NHL schedule for me, and that is the trade deadline. I'll be all over this, AJ. I'm refreshing my phone every 15 minutes just to see what the latest news is, and it's just a great time on the NHL schedule for me, and I know you feel the same way.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll drop some last-minute trade potential. Nothing finalized yet, but it looks like potentially Dominic Kubalik to be traded to either Anaheim or Edmonton. So the Blackhawks potentially moving Kubalik to Anaheim or Edmonton, latest reports that just came across here.
That's interesting because, you know, Edmonton, you'd like to think they're still in the race, but Anaheim certainly isn't. And what's Chicago doing by moving Kubalik? I'm not really sure what that could be all about. So an intriguing situation all the way around. And thanks for throwing that out. Something for our fans, listeners to consider as they listen to the tail end of this podcast. Stay right till the end. You never know what you're going to get out of us. But that was a good nugget, AJ. Thanks for coming up with it. So that's a fine place to stop. And when we get back to you next week, we'll be in our regular Thursday time slot, and we'll be reviewing the trades that happen on the Monday. And in the meantime, don't forget to catch us on DraftKings Sweat run in the morning. Mornings 11 o'clock Eastern to noon every day. We do a hockey segment where either AJ or I or both of us are featured. And I hope we can both be on that Tuesday one, AJ, because it should be a lot of fun. In the meantime, as always, please remember to send your comments or questions on Twitter. Follow me, Paul Bruno, at Statsman22. And you can follow AJ at AJSchultz24. As always, we invite you to listen to Puckcast to get our tips to stay ahead of the competition in your fantasy hockey planning and research. So long, everybody. Enjoy the trade deadline.